Blog Talk Radio.
Live on Blog Talk Radio. The Candid Frank Live Show.
Candid Frank Live.
With
about half of y'all motherfuckers on the hill.
John the Argo Boat Logo Granger.
Candid Frank Live.
Christopher Lion's Den Jones. Mike. The CFL is the best football in the world, Townsend. Kelly, Rough Rider Daddy Bale. Manasseh, Blog Talk Radio Show, Geber Medin. And Bruce, Hamilton Tiger Cat, 13th man, John Inch.
So it's been a lovely week. It truly has. It's been a restful week. Been hacking and coughing for the last couple of days, and I'm sure all of you have had. I'm not looking for sympathy, just saying I understand those of you that have been through it. Not pleasant, to say the least. Yeah, so the CFL is, again, another slow week. No announcement, and this is the only mention of the strike. The possible strike, the negotiation update. There is no update, and that's okay. We'll move on to football. Now, I have a wonderful announcement to make, and that is that we will be, as we did last year, we will be bringing in young football players of draft eligibility for the CFL, Canadian players, in fact. And they will have an opportunity to spend time with us, which will give you an opportunity to get to know your players. We had first-round draft choices last year, second-round draft choices, third-round draft choices. And, of course, we even had some that didn't get drafted until very late in the game. But we did have a smattering of each round. And so I guess it's your first opportunity as a CFL fan to talk to a player, get to know a player before he's drafted, much like a little like the teams. You know, they get to talk to the guy and they get a sort of a sense of the kind of person they might be drafting, because that is an important part of what makes a player a player. In life, you know, there's more to an individual, an organization, you know, than just their statistics. There are the, as everyone, you know, air quote time, intangibles. And those intangibles sometimes are something that make the decision as far as who and when you'll draft. And so, yeah, let us begin. And I have, should I assume that this is Christopher Jones?
I'd be here.
Okay. You're all that's here, because I haven't had a chance yet to call anybody, so I should call Kelly Bill. Now why don't you give us a dissertation on what you saw this week, highlight, and then we can talk about such items afterwards. Of what's been going on, first of all, in BC and then in the league, and maybe even comment on Hoggy's retirement, which turns out to be a wasted pick. And I think you called that, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I mean, BC, there's not really a whole lot going out here, if I remember correctly. Matt Norman, the center, signed an extension. So he's going to be with us to 2016. Not much else is happening in BC. Everything's Wally did it all last year, so there's not much happening this year. There's a couple of things that are happening around the league. Marwan Haig is retiring in Ottawa. As you said, this is a wasted pick for Desjardins, so he's 0-2, in my opinion, on different things. He did the pooch on Kevin Glenn, and now he blew this one apart because he should have known better. What else is happening? Chad Johnson is in the mini camp and down in Florida with Montreal. I'm just totally disgusted by all of that, but that's beside the point.
Well, you know, you do tend to have a high standard
opinions.
of ethnic.
Don't get me
ethical
in trouble. We did that last show, remember? That was bad.
Yeah, I know, but that's all right. That's all right. You know, ethical standards are a little you have your own personal ethical standards, and there are certain directions.
I don't think I do. I think that society does.
I don't think any one of us.
Because we're football players.
No. I understand, Christopher. All I'm saying is that we all have a different, you know, perception of what is ethical and what is unethical. The only thing I think we can agree on is that we do tend to show a little more leniency on those that we care about than those we don't. So I think that's the only fair statement one can make when it comes to ethical standards being, you know, there aren't many people that can see everything from every direction, 360 degrees, in my opinion.
But, yeah, I agree. But, I mean, the league, over 50% of the teams we're talking about, BC, Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, and Toronto, have all taken a really serious step towards this ending violence against women. So that's more than
violence in general, bullying,
generally,
all that
exactly
stuff.
Bullying, all of that, but
that
particularly
stuff.
Violence against women, right? I mean, that's what a lot of things that we've done.
But let me ask
now,
you this.
Now, over half of our teams, because we only have 9 teams and 5 of them here, are taking this position, that it's basically adoption by the majority of the league, and then to turn around
I get that, Christopher, but also, what good is it to the whole point of these kinds of programs are to turn people around to educate people in understanding what's wrong with society and here's what we think is wrong in this certain area, you know, bullying in school, violence against women and all that stuff. I think we all can agree that kind of stuff has to be curtailed. I've played a lot of it here on the show, you know, promoting that kind of thought and interviewing those kinds of people. But without forgiveness, there's no point to correcting people's behavior, Christopher. That's the concern I have where I sort of deviate from you. There has to be forgiveness. If there isn't forgiveness, there's no motivation for someone to change, don't you think?
I'm not denying that. In fact, I agree with it. Okay, I agree wholeheartedly with it.
And I'm talking about sincere. I'm talking about sincere change, not forgiveness for nothing. I'm talking about forgiveness for actual atonement. You know what I'm saying?
If you listen to his interviews, Chad Johnson's interviews, and I listen to a lot of them, he has remorse for getting caught. He has remorse for having to go to court. He has remorse for the multiple times that he missed his parole meetings. He has remorse for the fact that he lost his football career. But I have yet to hear him have remorse for his actions that got him in that situation.
Well, okay. Well, we can agree to disagree. And let's move on to the football part of the conversation and on as well to the other participants.
Much better. I love that.
Okay. And now
Thank
we
you.
Have...
I'm glad y'all did move on to the football stuff. I'm starting to hear it.
What's that?
I said, I'm glad y'all moving on to the football stuff because I'm tired of hearing about Chad Johnson. Let the man play.
Yeah.
Leave him alone.
Let's just move on. Okay, so we've established that he has some, we should have some concerns with his personality, but can we talk about the football part of this guy? Just in case, you know, he hooks up with Montreal and somehow it becomes an acceptable signing. If even for Christopher, which I doubt it will be, but I know you're a big proponent of him, Mike, and, you know, he's a great player. And as a player, an undistracted player, a player, as you said, allowed to play, you know, if he's allowed to play and if he does play. He brings a lot to the table, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. And I'm going to talk about the player, Chad Johnson. If Montreal signs Chad Johnson to a contract and he plays for Montreal this year, they're going to have the best receiving core in the CFL. I'm talking about you have multiple deep threats. You have multiple guys coming across the middle. I mean, come on, man. Deron Carter, S.J. Green, Jameer Richardson, Chad Johnson, and then you still got Dave Staller over there, the Wiley veteran. I mean, the guy is going to bring some swag and some spunk to their offense. And also, Montreal is going to have the top-selling jersey in the CFL. So Montreal is about to make some money this year if they sign him. And it's all about making money. That's what they're going to sign him for.
Well,
same thing.
Mike, it's not all about making money. Don't say that because that's not true. There's a little bit, as usual, Christopher always leaks out of me. We have to consider that there is a drag, which is called social responsibility on making money. There should be a little bit of responsibility before you're allowed to make money, at this level. But I'm just saying that because, you know, it isn't all. Let's not make it all. I hope it isn't all. That's my opinion. I don't want it to be all about money. I want there to be some responsibility.
I'm not trying to say it's going to be all about the money.
Yeah,
but,
no, okay.
I mean, hey, it is what it is.
It's a good thing.
I'm
just trying to reframe it. It's not all about the money when it comes to Chad Johnson. It's about ensuring that the ethics that the CFL brags about are consistent with his being brought in, and as long as I'm just hoping they establish with him or he establishes that he understands against what Christopher said, in other words opposing what Christopher said to a degree, and that this doesn't become a circus. Do you know what I mean? Money's fine, but
it's not gonna become a circus.
Good.
For the simple fact is that he's been in the NFL for 10 years. He's never been a distraction. If you talk to any of his teammates, listen to the articles and interviews, Chad Johnson is one of the best teammates they ever had. He's the first one in the building, the last one to leave. He's a hard worker. Even he likes the camera, true. Who don't like the camera when it's on him? He loves it. He's just an attention hog. But as a football player and a great teammate, nobody has nothing bad to say about him.
But you can compare him to Arland Bruce in that regard, because all of Arland's teammates have always loved that man, yet he can't keep his mouth shut in the media. He's constantly getting himself in trouble, and social media now has just blown this apart, not only for Arland, but for Chad Johnson as well. And I'd love to see the guy come up here. I'd love to see everything work out for him. I just don't think he has the ability to do it. I don't think he's got the ability to keep his mouth shut. And I don't think that there's a humble bone in his body, so he's not going to be that way. He's going to come up here and be the Chad Johnson.
We don't know what type of humble bone in his body that he has. He hasn't really even spoke out yet or got in front of the cameras with the media, the CFL.
There you go.
Spoke on Twitter and a lot of the other social sites. So, give him a
right
break
now,
about being
nothing.
Humble. We don't know he's not the type of humble guy he is. Don't nobody know.
Thank you, Mike, and we'll leave it there. We'll leave it there as far as his what he's done. Let's wait for him to do something before we start talking about it. Okay, so let's do one thing. Let's do one thing, and I think just to make sure that we keep this on a football perspective as opposed to a social debate, let's talk about what he does after, if and when he joins the Alouettes, and what he does, which is what the point was that I was trying to make with you, Mike, earlier, is let's give him a bit of a blank page, but let's make sure that he understands that we care about that kind of stuff in the CFL. That's all. So he has to respect that and understand that, unlike the NFL, we take pride, our players take pride in going into the community and being healers, instead of, what basically Chad Johnson can be, which is what Christopher is saying, is he could be, a lightning rod for what's wrong and what the CFL is trying to. We don't want him to be a poster boy for the reason why, we're glad that CFL players, come into the communities, with bullying and and you know, abuse of all kinds. You know, let's not just go with women. Let's go abuse of everybody gets it. You know, anybody can.
Right. And, but you know what, Frank? I'm thinking, you know, the guy has learned some lesson with his one
good.
His one off-the-field problem. He's been out of football for a couple of years. And when you be out of football for a couple of years and you haven't received a paycheck, believe me, you're going to humble yourself to get a paycheck to redeem yourself to make people
look at
you a
certain way. So that's what we're looking for then, Mike, a humble.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what Christopher's, you know, getting at, really. And that's why I said the little bit of Christopher in me agrees with him, is that he has to come out and be very cognizant of, you know, the standards here in the CFL. And that there are a lot of our friend Christopher Jones, who's in the room right here, I don't want to talk like he's not even here, but there are a lot of people like Christopher. There are a lot of people like Christopher. Christopher's not the minority. In fact, I dare say he may be the silent majority. He may represent the silent majority who really don't like those kinds of players, even if they've changed in the CFL. Right, Christopher? Isn't that the point?
That's not my point.
Oh, okay, good. Then we're good.
I am not dead set against Chad Johnson
okay,
anyway.
So forgiveness is good enough, right? Like if the guy does, you know, respect and understand. I don't want to use the word morals because, like, gosh, sports morals. There's nothing further from morality than sports. You know, it's a game, and we play it. And sometimes they do things that are not acceptable outside of the field, you know, on the field. And sometimes, even worse, they do things that are unacceptable away from the field. So, you know, this is all I meant. What I was saying, Christopher, is that we don't accept that kind of behavior. And hopefully, this guy will either not display it or make it clear that he understands and is, you know, like I said, cognizant of the fact that that kind of behavior is unacceptable, and he will have to be. Like Mike says, and I have no reason to believe that he won't be humble. And my point
I was trying to make earlier before you guys tried to drag it back to football and it never did get there, was that five teams out of this league have very strong positions about this ending violence against women. If Chad Johnson came into the CFL, he showed his remorse, he spoke out against his actions and the actions of others like that, and he did the public service announcements on behalf of that type of an association, you know what? I would champion the man.
Okay, good. But give him a chance
to make the team. But everything that I have seen so far of him in interviews over the last year, because I've gone back and I've YouTubed everything that he's put out.
We've been through this.
There's no remorse, and there's nothing there.
So
you know,
what you mean, it is remorse, William, but why should he mention something that happened in his past, remorse about him and his ex-wife, man. You know what I'm saying? He don't want to be bringing it up because every time you look around, it's going to be brought up in the news after a certain part when it's done
well,
over.
Well, he's not
going to
be able to avoid
to
it.
Move on. He's not going to be able to avoid it, but you don't want to keep talking about it every time you look around when it's not going to even be the subject of topic when you're talking football. You know, a lot of people ain't going to keep going back to that, man. He done did his time. He done did his probation. He did whatever. And my thing on it, him and Jim Pop must have had a deep sit-down conversation, and Jim Pop must have heard something or seen something or did some more background work on him to even tell him to come to the camp.
And you're right.
I don't believe that. I don't
well,
believe
okay,
that.
Look, let me split the hair between
the two of
you. Jim Pop salivating so
at the mouth here. He went off and put him on the neg list as soon as he possibly could, even though that Johnson was talking with Wally Buono at the time. Pop went out there. He creamed his jeans trying to get this boy. He would sell his soul to the devil right now.
Oh,
but, you know,
come
I'm not
on.
Believing.
Come on.
I'm pretty sure Pop is a stand-up guy.
Okay, I'm sorry. You guys are just wrong here.
Okay, none of us know what's true, especially Christopher. When you start getting into the emotional feelings, get inside Jim Pop's head, obviously you're not right. You know, because you don't know what's going on inside his head. You're making some presumptions there.
Look,
listen, all that Pop has to do, you know the timeline.
Chad Johnson was talking with Wally Buono, and Pop threw him on
now
the necklace.
It sounds like you're jealous that Montreal, you know, basically.
No, because Wally said, absolutely not, I won't have him on my team. So I don't really care.
Okay, good.
But you know what?
But Pop did it.
But
look, that's unethical in itself.
No, it's not, because they own the rights to Chad Johnson if he was to ever play in the CFL. So when he got drafted out of college, you understand what I'm saying?
He didn't own it then.
And
he just bought it now.
The thing about it is the owners of the Montreal Alouettes, Jim Pop, they must have had a deep down sit down with Chad Johnson and even talk to him to even think about bringing him into the
Mike,
camp.
You're right. Mike, they had as big a conversation.
I think you're making some assumptions here that don't.
Guys,
Pop,
neither of you,
you know,
is wrong.
Pop
neither
is
of you is wrong.
Guy,
guys, neither
Pop
of you is wrong. Both,
guy.
You're both
and I'm
right.
Sure,
you're both
I'm
right.
Sure
Mike, you're
you.
Both right. The only kind of conversation they probably had was a conversation long enough to decide whether he sounds at least okay enough to try out. Remember, he hasn't made the team. He might not be coming up with the Owls. So at this point, to get into all that detail is a waste of time. First, have a look at the guy. You know, come on, guys. Like, you know, like, you're not even the Owls, and I'm not. I don't think I'm that intelligent, but I know I wouldn't waste much time figuring out that part just yet. I'd like to see what he looks like first, and then go from there. See if he's worth worrying about. They don't even know if he's worth worrying about yet. He's been out of the game for 2 years. Let's talk football. I mean, can he play the game?
Like,
can he
play Steven Giles?
You know, exactly.
And you know what? You know what, Frank? And from the videos that he's been putting up on his workouts, the guy hasn't even lost a step, man. The guy
good,
is still out there
good.
Running fast. He's catching the balls. I mean, on his workout videos, he looks like he's in shape. He looks like he can go out there. It's not like he might be a number two guy. He might be a number three guy, but he's going to make the offense better as far as the football team. He's going to bring some swag to that
and
receiver.
And all we
court.
Hope, but we, Mike, we can agree that all we hope that he doesn't bring a circus along with him. That's all. And I'm not saying
it.
He will. I'm just saying. You know what I'm saying? That's what I hope, because we all want to think about football. So let's talk about football. You say he hasn't lost a step. You say he's more than capable of at least athletically playing for the team. The biggest problem with big receivers that come from the NFL is they can't waggle. Do you think he can pick that up?
You know what? Chad Johnson might can pick up the waggle, but he will be better as the stationary receiver coming off the line and being on the edge where he can spread the field deep because he get his speed going. I mean, CFL has some quick defensive backs, but he also still has speed. So I would put Chad Johnson on the end. Yeah, and he's big. You put him in, let him come across the middle, big target, big body. Man, he's going to be real potent. If they sign him, man, Jim Pop and Montreal are going to have a good offense, man. I'm telling you. It's going to help Daron Carter with an NFL veteran that then help him out along with S.J. Green and Jameer Richardson, man. Their offense, they're going to be salivating, man, when they get that ball, especially if Trey Smith turns out to be the starter. Oh, man,
well,
I can't wait to see it, especially if he signs.
You know, the CFL East is going to be incredible, and I'm going to enjoy every game, win or lose, as an Argo fan, win or lose. I'm going to enjoy every game because I'm going to be saying it looks like all four teams in the East the difference is going to be very little. And when I say difference is going to be very little, between the top team and the bottom team when you go up the stairs. I'm not saying all four teams are going to be tied. I'm just saying it's going to be tight. It's going to be a battle to make the playoffs. It's going to be a battle to be the home team in the Eastern Final. And it's going to be a battle to stop a team from the Western Conference interrupting their playoff opportunities. So it is going to be a very interesting season.
It's going to be a tight fight between fourth and third place. It's going to be tight between third and second place. It'll be tight between second and first. So
and that's,
we can all agree
on that.
That's the difference between first and fourth is going to be 3, maybe 4, 5 points tops. It's not going to be a 3-15 team versus a 12-6.
Right.
That's
much
not
like
going to happen.
West.
That's not, I don't think
much
it's
like
going to happen
West.
In the. I don't think that's going to happen in the league anywhere this year.
Exactly.
I still don't have confidence in Winnipeg.
Well, you know, I, I, I know. You know, the problem we have with Winnipeg and Edmonton is we've got two teams who are iffy, right? Who are really, we must admit that they're iffy. I know that Manasseh believes the world of Winnipeg, which is great, and you know, I think Winnipeg will play well. But Winnipeg and Edmonton
are a better team.
Winnipeg and Edmonton are going to be trying to keep up with three pretty good teams. And I know there's people who say that Saskatchewan's going to falter or Calgary's going to falter or, well, nobody said BC will falter. You won't let them say that. So, you know,
they can say it all they want.
I'm pulling your leg. Now, listen, Kelly didn't jump in. He hates that kind of conversation, I know, by his silence. We're talking about football now, Kelly, and you're
so
getting
Kelly's
a lot of...
on the phone? What's up, Kelly?
Hey, up, guys?
Yeah,
I ain't even on his own, man. How you doing, bro?
No worries. I'm doing real good, yeah. It's a nice Monday night in Regina.
Go. Regina's doing real well. And we just talked about the fact that, the East is going to be a very tight battle. And all the fans of all the teams are going to be very excited this year. I think it's going to be one of the greatest CFL seasons ever. And your team, you know, we have people in the room and people from time to time. I think it's more wishful thinking that Saskatchewan is going to have difficulty. But isn't that the problem for Edmonton and Winnipeg, where teams trying to improve when you have those other three teams above them? That's the only reason
why
the West won't be as close.
It really is. Oh, for sure. And, I mean, you know, you look at Winnipeg and Edmonton, and if I'm a GM and, I'm jobless and I'm being contacted by either of those teams, I'm looking at them as, you know, a big ball of twine that I got to untangle. And, the problems aren't just on the field. They run deep throughout the organization. And, I really don't want either of those jobs if I'm a GM. So kudos to those GMs for putting their noses in there and
laying it on the line.
Right.
Laying it on the line.
At the same time, I just think that they got a long way to go against some pretty deep rosters from last year in the West. BC is definitely the most like they were last year. Calgary is, you know, right behind them in that sentiment. They've lost a few key elements, but nothing too earth-shattering. Saskatchewan, on the other hand, has lost a lot of big names. So, you know, we got some work to do there, and we've been doing it. But, every day that things do and don't happen, the story changes a little bit. And today we signed Ryan Smith, that prospect that we had on the neg list.
Excellent.
Yeah,
good for you guys.
For sure. So, you know, in addition to Chaz Schillens and a guy out of the Quebec Conference and the CIS and, a couple other young receivers, it's going to be a real fun time up at camp in Saskatoon just to see what kind of a team we do have. I mean, it's exciting. And, you know, we're sitting right where we want. People are underestimating us already. And what more can you ask for? You know, win a championship and then be underestimated. Like, I'm sure Chamberlain's licking his lips.
Well, it doesn't hurt to be an underdog at any time.
No, it's never a bad thing. I mean,
it's never
a bad
thing.
No pressure.
Absolutely no pressure. You know, nothing you like more than having.
There's never a coach in Saskatchewan that doesn't have pressure.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying, though, Chris, right? Like with the championship season and then, you know, relatively little pressure compared to a defending champion in the CFL where, you know, the push is to repeat. I don't think people here honestly expect a repeat, but, there'll be the handful of people that are really, you know, pushing it, and then there'll be the people that – from around the league mostly, but even within the province, that think, no way, you know, like, it's just too much to ask for, right? So.
And it is too much to ask for and expect. The pressure that's put on Saskatchewan is to win. Now, once you've won, I disagree that there's a lot of pressure on them this year because, come on, they just won. Saskatchewan fans aren't complete idiots. You know, we might want to portray them as that when it comes to being, you know, opposing fans. But in reality, they're human beings like the rest of us, and they're going to rest on their laurels a little bit. You know, you're not as hungry the following year as you were before you won. So, you know, and I don't think there's that kind of pressure. And I think that kind of helps, you know, Saskatchewan a little bit because, you know, there isn't the pressure to win that big one at home. There isn't the pressure to win one right now. I don't think there is. The same way, you know, you win, there's got to be a time that you can, that the fans can enjoy being the champion, you know. And it will depend on how the team, even if there is pressure on Saskatchewan. It's all a question of how the coaching staff under Chamblain and the decision makers in the office, you know, under Taman, how they deal with it. You know, there are winners that, well, I always say winners win and losers lose. And if they are true winners, they'll figure out ways to win. Do they have to win a Grey Cup every year, well, Kelly? Do they have to win a Grey Cup every year?
No, they don't. And maybe this is something that we should do, Frank, is rate the pressure of each team across the league, just based on whatever factors we can muster up. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
we can have
that's
an opinion.
Interesting topic.
We can have an opinion, and why they have that. Why they have pressure on them. Hey, I'll start.
Right.
I'll start. Let's start as far east as you want to go from east to west or west to east. I'll make you. I'll let
yeah,
you make
that's
that.
A good idea. I think
we'll
east
go from,
to west is best.
Okay.
That way we don't have to listen to Christopher if we run out of time.
Oh, we won't run out of time. And you're just being nasty.
I'm just kidding, buddy. I'll start with east.
I like that idea. And what we're saying is we're giving our insights into why we think a team is going to do better than another this year,
right.
This coming
exactly.
season. And I'll start with Montreal and suggest that in Montreal, the pressure to win is always there, even after they more than Saskatchewan. This is a place where if they won the Grey Cup, they are still under the same pressure more than any other team in the league, I believe. My opinion only. And so, you know, for them this year, especially the way they lost last year, you know, they teased the fans. Unintentionally.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't do it on purpose. It just worked out that way. I mean, imagine if you're an Al fan and you're going into a year and you're going, well, you know, the Argos won the Grey Cup last year. It's time for us to mete out some revenge. And they go to mete out the revenge, and the next thing you know, they're tumbling, and they're tumbling even more. And they know, and they look on the field at themselves, and they're not happy. And the leader of the team is unhappy. They came from that to a missed, and I hate repeating it, but it's important to mention it because that is, you know, how close Montreal made it to the Grey Cup last year after being such a horrible mess, you know, a third of the way through the season. And Jim Popp came in, whether he liked being the coach or not, whether he wanted to be the coach or not, came in, and as many here agree, the best defense probably in the CFL, picked the offense up. A couple of young studs came in, and that team started rolling, and then they came to the point where they played the Eastern Final against Hamilton and lost on what was a questionable call. And I got to say, if that doesn't put pressure on the team this year, because they might not have gotten anywhere, but as far as the fans are concerned, they believe, they have every reason and every right to believe in their team being able to make it to the Grey Cup this year after that season. And so for them, I say in the league right now, when Montreal, I would have to say they probably have probably the most pressure of any team in the CFL to do well because they're more than capable of it.
Well, there's been so many years where Montreal really has had no competition in the East. And don't get that wrong, but it's been a long time where there was anybody that was really going to come out of the East other than Montreal. Once that is established in the fans' minds, it doesn't matter how good the other teams become. They still have that expectation that my team is the best. I mean, it's the same thing in BC. We've been top of the league, what, 9 out of the last 11 years or something like that, first place?
Yeah, it's great.
And we expect that. We don't expect to win Grey Cups, but we expect to be the number one team. I don't understand it, but, you know, but so that expectation in Montreal is always going to be there until a new generation comes in.
that's what I have to say about that Montreal.
Mike,
I agree. I agree with you, Frank.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mike?
Yeah, to me right now, I think Montreal has the most pressure right now, especially with everything going on with the off-season talks and, you know, people that they might sign for the future, future contracts before the season. I mean, you know, there was almost there, like you said, Frank, questionable call. So, you know, right now, the East, Montreal, I think would be number one, then Toronto, but they got the most pressure out of everybody. Toronto don't even have pressure on to win the Grey Cup this year.
Are we talking about pressure or are we talking about expectations?
Well, expectations, like Kelly said, I think what Kelly meant to say was there's a lot of contributing factors to pressure, and expectations is high on the list, right, Kelly?
Exactly.
Correct.
It's just one of the many, many, yeah, for sure. And, you know, there's other things, too, and we can get into some of those for other teams, I think. Who wants to take the lead on Ottawa? Anybody?
Well, you know what? I'll take the lead on Ottawa, and then I'll start,
sure.
Then everybody can finish because I know everybody has different opinions. Right
yeah.
now, the way I see it, Ottawa doesn't have the pressure, but the people that they're signing to contracts to play for the team, they have some expectations on competing this year. Not saying
yeah,
that they're
sure.
going to win the Grey Cup or – you know, the people that they're signing for their team, Ottawa wants to be a first-year expansion in the playoffs. They might not.
Mm-hmm.
They might not. They might get ousted first round. They might not. It's going to be a toss-up. But when you have a quarterback of Henry Burris caliber and, you know, you got the weapons that you have and you're putting a good defense together, I'm not looking at them as being a slouch team this year, man. They're really putting the pieces where they belong.
You see, you're describing how the pressure ends up on Ottawa. That's
yeah.
how the pressure begins to be established on Ottawa, where they are not supposed to be, by virtue of all the news and signings, a pushover in any game, which for an expansion team is a lot of pressure.
It is.
Right, but nobody's going to be disappointed if they don't make it, right?
Right. Yep.
If Ottawa does end up with a losing record, nobody's going to be shocked or saying, oh, my God, they should have done so much better. But the pieces that they're putting into place right now, they're building a competitive team. And they're not building a competitive team for this. They're building a competitive team in the CFL to win. And,
right.
and I believe they're doing a lot of really good things. And, you know, I'm in the group mouthing off about things that they're doing wrong. But the things that they're doing right far, far outweigh anything they're doing wrong.
Well, they've
sure.
been given
yeah,
an
I
excellent
agree.
Opportunity. They've been given an excellent opportunity by the CFL and the rest of the teams to be successful.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a mistake, we can call Haji a mistake, right, that they drafted him. And they should have known that he was contemplating retirement because he made it clear he was contemplating retirement before the draft.
Even before the draft, he was going to retire from Hamilton. You know, it was
at the end of the
dumb
season,
move.
He talked about retiring. You know,
that kind of mistake could have hurt them really bad.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to get out that kind of mistake could have hurt them real bad. But because of the way the CFL arranged the draft, they were allowed to draft good players like him. And so they're getting, you know, high risk, high reward, you know, as opposed to low risk, low reward, usually in the draft.
Exactly. And they made another boo-boo when they drafted Rory Kohler, who got signed back by Winnipeg. That was another boo-boo. But other than that, maybe just the naming of the mascot, and that's the only other boo-boo really to speak of for Ottawa. But one thing I think about them, and why I mentioned Ottawa right after we were talking about expectations, was it's all about expectations for them. These things that they've done have created the expectations, and I still think managing those expectations is job number one for Ottawa this year. And I would still put them last in the East for pressure, even though they've got a little bit of pressure. I think all three, Hamilton, Montreal, and Toronto, have greater pressure.
I don't think so. I don't think Toronto has. I think I'll speak as a fan. We'll move on to Toronto yet. Y'all haven't. Once we get to Toronto, I'll disagree with that statement. I'll explain why.
Well, let's go there.
So Ottawa.
Let's go there.
Ottawa.
Let's go
okay.
There.
So we're done with Ottawa. We done with Ottawa.
Yeah, I'm good with Ottawa.
Okay.
We all know what.
So
what
I'm
going to
say about
Ottawa.
Toronto is there's no pressure on Toronto by virtue of the giant elephant in the room. That is a total distraction to anybody actually thinking about what the team should or should not be doing. Not only for the fans, but for the team as well. And guys, I hate to say this, but guys, the distraction of whether MLSC is going to buy the team or not is causing a lot of non-thinking by fans. Like, how can I, as an Argo fan, really seriously worry about the team when they're not making any announcements? I can't argue with the moves they're making. Of course, I don't agree with the moves they're not making. So, you know, so basically I'm in the position where I'm going, okay, this is going to be the kind of year that Hamilton had last year where they're going to start slow. And as an Argo fan, I'm going to hope that once the elephant is recognized in the room and then he's put out to pasture wherever he or she has to go, and then we can start thinking about football, hearing about football, talking about football, and questioning the football moves that Mr. Barker makes and the coaching moves that both the defensive and offensive coordinator, head coach, of course, Milanovic, and then we'll start to talk football. But right now, it's like we're in a holding pattern. Argo fans are in a holding pattern right now. We can't think about the team because there's this big thing about to happen. We've all heard about it. We've heard the whispers. Some of us have heard a little more, and it causes us, to be distracted by what's not football, and that is the ownership of the team. And that's why I'm saying there really isn't that much pressure on the team yet, because they don't even know for sure who's going to own them when the season starts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the pressure immediately that comes into my head, and no offense, Frank, or any other Argo fans, John, is just to stay ahead of Ottawa. I think Toronto fans would be extremely defeated if Ottawa ended up ahead of them in the standings this year. And I know that Toronto has the ability to be second or maybe even first, but at the same time, I see them in that third spot near season's end and hopefully not that fourth spot behind Ottawa.
If the team is actually in resale mode, to me, as long as the team, this is basically the rule of thumb that I have when it comes to any sporting event and I go, as long as the team is competitive. Now, you're right, though. It would be a little painful to finish behind Ottawa. That, without a doubt, is a for sure. You're right about
that. That's correct.
Yeah, that's not really a lot of pressure. Now, if you would have said to me, the Argos have the pressure of keeping up with Hamilton and Montreal, and we want that extra home game, the pressure of being, a Ricky Ray team, if you will, a team with that's equal to the quarterback that we have, because there is that expectation because we have that quarterback that he can overcome anything by virtue of who he is. And yeah, then maybe if a lot of people expected or wanted or them to finish first, that would be a lot of pressure. But I don't expect them to finish first. And to be honest with you, I really don't care if they finish first. It would be great if they had the home game. It's financially advantageous to have that extra home game and go on the road the next game. So.
That's first or second. It doesn't matter. You still get the home game. It's still the same thing, right?
Right. I mean,
but
you have
Kelly
an extra
doesn't
point
Frank,
there.
Let me
ask you, Frank.
Honestly, think
go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just saying, as Kelly said, if we honestly believe that Montreal has got their ducks in a row and everything is happy the way that they're doing it and things fall into place the way that they should – and we all know that Hamilton is rocking the eastern side at this point in time. So if you end up with a 1-2 Hamilton-Montreal, does that put Toronto in third and dogfighting with Ottawa for the last playoff position? So, I mean, Kelly does have some merit with his concern
I'm not that worried about finishing ahead of Ottawa. I'm not that worried about finishing ahead of Ottawa.
I think he should.
You don't. Yeah, Frank. You don't think so?
No.
Because I'm looking at Toronto, and you know they lost some key players, but
sure they did.
But you hear my butt, and that's with a capital B. As long as you got the captain of the ship healthy and throwing the ball, and you have a healthy Tackert and a healthy Chad Owens, you have a chance.
Would you guys agree that Chad Owens was not as effective last year as he was the year before, and he's got plenty of improvement, room for improvement?
That's correct.
Yes.
Right?
That's correct.
And Chad
did not come to play last year.
Well, he had a lot of injuries.
You know what I mean?
And see, the thing about it is with Chad Owens, Toronto, as for the coach, they have to figure out what they're going to do. Is he going to be a receiver, or is he going to be the kickoff and punt return man?
I think the kick returning experiment is over.
I hope so. I hope so.
I think he took a toll last year. In fact, his injuries came from kick returning.
It took a good toll.
No, that's not true.
The concussion came from receiving, actually.
Receiving.
Yeah. Leave him as a receiver, and you find a deadly kickoff punt returner to put back there in the field that can get you some yards on the kickoff and punts. Toronto offense, to me, is going to be fine because you still have Jason Barnes. I mean, you know, come on, man. He's still in his prime.
I think the defense is going to be fine, too, because I think Tim Burke will now be able to relax and do what he's good at. And I believe that the CFL, experienced guys like Tim Burke, they have some guys that are willing to come around and join him. Just like some guys followed Chris
Jones. Your defense is going to be better. Your defense is going to be better this year than last year.
It couldn't get any worse.
Exactly. You know, a lot of what happened last year, I'm not trying to take credit away from Hamilton. And by the way, I don't have my Facebook up, so I don't know if, you will tell me if Bruce wants to in.
Bruce is talking to me. He's saying hi to all the guys. He's just finishing up his supper, and he's listening in and enjoying. And he basically said, what's the deal with the crybaby Owens anyhow?
I'll keep you up to date
on what Bruce is saying because we're having a good conversation here.
Okay, well, good, because I'm trying to keep us on the air. So, but whenever he wants to be on, I see. Okay, have a great show, brother. I'm just going to be a listener tonight. Oh, cheers to everyone. Okay, cheers to everyone. And Oski Wee Wee back at you, buddy. The Argos have last year, I think. Whether you guys want to admit it or not, a lot of what made Hamilton look good last year was how bad Toronto played, really, when it mattered.
Injuries. Yep. They certainly didn't make their name against the Riders.
Nope.
Nope. Or anybody else out east or out west.
Out west, exactly. Yeah, they got crushed out west last year.
Who, are you talking about Hamilton?
Yeah, Hamilton, yeah. Well, besides Edmonton, they took it on the chin out here.
Yeah, no, but, you know, and that's why I sit here, you know, saying to myself, will it be more of the same? Or, you know, did we have, you know, every team, and this is not an excuse, because every team has the misfortune of getting hurt. But again, not every team, dependent on who gets hurt, can overcome those injuries. Some injuries are like, we'll put it this way. If before last year you told me that Ray would get hurt and his replacement would win 4 games in a row in the West on the road, mm-hmm. and Tackert got hurt, you know, and Tackert got hurt, and rather than that be the problem, Tackert was a problem, him being hurt, I would have thought that losing Ray would have been more hurtful than losing Tackert. But as it turned out, guys, I believe the opposite was true. I think the team missed Tackert more than they did Ray last year.
Without question.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Kolaris came in and owned up.
Yep. They had a quality next up at the quarterback and not a quality next up at the running back.
You know what? I'm not going to say Norwood wasn't quality. He was serviceable.
Right. Norwood worked his way into the lineup, and he has the faith. I think he'll be back again. Or they drop him?
Will Tackert be back?
Yeah, well, Well, the point is that Norwood was new to the game, right? Let's remember that.
Yeah, because he's from the NFL. He's from the NFL.
You know, he was new to the game, you know, his first year. So we have to cut him slack and say,
he's going to be better. He's going to be better.
I liked when he did the more bull thing. You know, I liked him when he went north-south more than east-west.
Well, who doesn't like a north-south runner?
Well, okay, right. So I spoke the opposite. Sorry.
Is that not why we like Cornish?
Exactly.
Yes. But see, the thing with Norwood was in the NFL, Norwood was a pounder. You know, so you can give him the ball, and he can hit the middle or he can hit the outside, lower the shoulder, and create the boom. You know what I'm saying? But again, a CFL running back and an NFL running back is totally different. So, you know, once he get used to that CFL game, he'll be okay because he was serviceable, man. He did what he was asked to do.
Yeah, and he did it, and he helped the team quickly. It's kind of hard for that kind of running back who isn't flashy to all of a sudden our focus is on a running back who, A, isn't flashy, who's more of a north-south kind of guy, who isn't he's a bull more than a guy who makes guys miss. You know, he's a run-over kind of guy rather than a guy who makes people miss, which is far more exciting, you know, the east-west part of being a running back. It looks more exciting. So, you know, maybe I underestimate his ability. Maybe he was a lot better than I give him credit for. So, but I'm willing to leave the door open for any running back that they bring in. I just hope it'll be somebody that can churn up some yards because they didn't have that.
I
would
to come back
in.
You better hope they do because I'm sure not putting a lot of faith in Cackard coming back this year.
Well, that kind of injury that he had is hard to come back from. But you know what?
It's debilitating.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
everybody hopes he does. He's an exciting back. But,
I love
you know,
the
if
guy.
He like John said, he just took his cast off 2 weeks ago. Ouch! We're less than 2 months from training camp. You know?
Yes,
no,
sir.
He's not going to be up to full speed. If he's 60% by training camp, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, well,
I would truly be surprised.
So as far as the quotient that we're debating here, where would the Argos fit in pressure? I would have to think that they would be below Montreal, below Hamilton, and below everyone in the West, to be honest with you, because, like I said, they really didn't play that well at the end last year. We're more in a position as Argo fans, I think. We're a wait and see. And we have faith like the rest of you guys with your management teams. And we'll see how it plays out. And I want to remind other Argo fans that the year begins and then ends in November. And how you end is how you end up being successful. So I don't think there should be that much. There will be a lot of pressure on them, but I don't think it'll be as much as other places in the CFL.
So this is the exact opposite to Ottawa. So Toronto's expectations are not very high, but I think they're going to have more pressure because they had such a terrible year last year. Where Ottawa, the expectations aren't high, or expectations of being successful are high, but the pressure is not there.
Okay. Sounds like semantics to me, but I'll go with it. Regardless, you're saying
right?
that they're both – but what you are saying is they're both kind of close in both regards. Expectations for both are about the same, and the pressure is about the same. Just a minor difference.
The expectations in Ottawa is for them to come strong out of the gate and do some good. Where what you're saying is that Toronto didn't do all that well that last year. They didn't make a lot of good changes this year. They still got some players that are down. So the expectations of Toronto actually doing something more than last year aren't there. But the pressure from the fans or from everybody else should be.
But I haven't built, in my mind as of yet, I haven't built up any expectations about the Argos this year. In fact, if things stay the way they are right now, if they miss the playoffs, I won't be surprised. And or there won't be any pressure for them to make the playoffs. I'm serious.
Right.
Because right now I'm telling you that elephant in the room is hard to ignore. And we're all Argo fans are whether the, if you ask Argo fans, what's the most important issue facing the Argos today? And sort of not suggest whether it's a person, a thing, or a purchase of the franchise. I guarantee you 9 out of 10 of them are going to go, we're hoping we get that new owner. We're hoping we get that new owner.
Yeah.
That's where the pressure is right now, is to get this team owned by somebody who has money and jam to promote the team and ensure that we, the fans, get good nights to watch the game.
Yep. And
that's where the pressure is. To me, that's where the pressure is as an Argo fan.
Fans are totally just focused on that right now. I mean, we have two of them in this room, and there's a couple more of them in the CFL's group, and they're chiming right in on the ownership stuff and kind of quiet otherwise. So I think you nailed it, Frank. Who can represent Hamilton?
Well, Bruce you're on Facebook. I got your window open. Will you guys finish? How does the pressure sit in your mind with Hamilton?
Well, expectations for Hamilton are huge.
Yeah.
Okay, the expectations are huge. They've gone out and they've taken a bought every free agent that's eligible out there that was worth anything. They've got Ken Austin, who is not a loser in anything that he touches.
Right.
They got Eric Tillman backing him up, which has been successful just about everywhere that he's been, as long as he's been allowed to do his work.
Yes, sir.
They've got themselves a little stud for a quarterback that they really are putting a lot of faith into.
But they're not just sitting on him.
No, they're not. No. They've backed him up. And they've established and put together a quality team to go off and win a Grey Cup. Not only win a Grey Cup, win a few Grey Cups. So, I mean, their expectations are huge. The pressure is huge. But I believe that they have the best handle on any of it.
Yeah.
There's my belief in Hamilton.
It's been huge since the Fantuz deal. Like, let's make no mistake about it, right, Frank? They cranked it up right around the time when they got Fantuz, and they thought the world of their. I mean, Phyllis Jesperson already has a Grey Cup 2014 shirt. You know,
good for her.
I'm just fibbing there, but yeah, you know, like it's in the bag for them as far as their fans are concerned. I mean, Bruce is pretty concerned.
So how does that fit in the pressure scale? I mean, they're under a lot of pressure.
Your fans are, you know, I mean, all those call-in shows and stuff in Hamilton, they're just going to be going off this year if they lose.
it's going to be fun. Almost like Saskatchewan when things go rough.
Expectations and pressure in Hamilton is going to be the largest of any team in the CFL this year.
Yeah, it could
bigger
be
than BC.
In Montreal, bigger?
Bigger.
Huh. Hamilton number two.
I'm going to go with Hamilton number one, Montreal number two, Toronto number three, and Ottawa number four. My opinion has been swayed by virtue of the fact that there has to be more pressure on the Argos to make the playoffs than Ottawa, and that's where I'm basically making my opinion. Mm-hmm.
No arguments.
Okay, so and why don't you line yours up in top four in the how they line up in the East, Christopher?
Mike. Oh, okay. Christopher.
You mean as in how I think they're going to
land?
Order of pressure.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Hamilton, Montreal, Toronto, Ottawa.
Okay, you agree.
Yep.
Okay, how about you, Kelly?
Yeah, I would say Montreal, Hamilton, Toronto, and Ottawa.
So you feel that Montreal has more pressure on them
I do.
Because of the fans, I guess, right?
Yep, for sure. And
strictly on their expectations.
The
the bottom line, too, I mean, they're challenging the fans this year as well, right, to step it up because they had some pretty shoddy shows last year. I mean, there's no secret about that. They didn't fill the building, and that's a small barn, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, Montreal has a, you know, they have a reputation for if you don't win, we don't come in.
Right. And that's their thing,
yeah,
but,
well,
you know, like,
that's
what I'm saying, is if the ownership puts the pressure on the fans, I'm pretty sure they're going to have to do their darndest to do something for the fans, you know?
Yeah.
Good point,
so,
Kelly.
So,
very good point.
That is a very valid point. So the pressure on them is if they're going to make money, they got to win. Or they're going to be losing money.
I mean,
but we've all established that the teams, the gate is what determines whether they make a profit or not.
Hamilton's going to sell out this year straight across the board. Doesn't matter who comes into the town. Hamilton fans support their team. They're good on them, right? That's who they are. So Montreal, in the other case, as Kelly points out, is a fair-weather football team. And they got to be putting
football
out,
fans.
Or they're not showing
football
up.
Fans. Football fans.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and that's a lot of pressure. And you're right. Okay. Well, you know, maybe I'll have to agree with Kelly.
I might reevaluate that as well. Okay?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Is that they have the fans are they put a lot of pressure on their team, not just to win, but if they want them to show up.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Serge will tell you it's always on in Montreal. I mean, it's just always on.
Always. Yeah, I hear you. All right. So moving west, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
No, you got to ask Mike. Is he still here?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
Mike. Sorry,
don't forget Mike.
Yeah, Mike.
Yeah, I'm still
order.
Here, man.
Your order.
Okay.
Hamilton, Montreal, Toronto, and Ottawa.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the reason I put Hamilton first is, like you guys said, man, they went on ahead and signed a stud quarterback, and now they got to put the money where their mouth is. They signed a lot of free agents to compete in the West.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just got to see how it all folds out. I hope it folds all right, you know. Hamilton's still my team. Go Cats.
Okay, let's move West, and I guess that would put Winnipeg next. And the Blue Bombers were a team last year with a new stadium. The excitement was epic, and as far as, you know, the people showing up at the stadium, they had maybe one good game at home, and I would suggest that they have a lot of pressure on themselves because of the poor showings they had at home. You know, they did well in that one.
Yeah, if you're
going to
show up for any game of the season, that was it.
They did for the Banjo Bowl, and they were full value for their victory. And it was a heartbreaking loss for Saskatchewan, but I have to say, and I'm still going to say, that they had a poor showing otherwise at home. And you know, regardless of whether a team is good or bad, the biggest sin a team can have is not play well at home in front of their fans. You know, and I think that's where most of the pressure is going to come to them, where they're going to have to play well at home, something they haven't done yet, and really make, you know, their stadium their home stadium. They haven't done that yet.
Yeah.
And that's where all the pressure is going to be for Winnipeg.
What an opportunity for an individual on that club. You know, we talked about the old, what was it, the Yankee Stadium, or was it the Brooklyn Dodger Stadium, the house that Jack built, you know what I mean? Like,
that's the Yankees.
What an opportunity for a player in Winnipeg, or maybe Kyle Walters, maybe he'll be the George Halas, you know what I mean?
Yep.
On this new building. Like, that's exciting, and that's happening all over the league, and that's just, oh, boy.
But isn't that what playing well is all about, that you establish at home? You know, like you're saying, you know, what you're talking about are the memorable moments at home, and there aren't many when you lose all your games at home.
And the victory
that they did have, you know, while I don't think it made up for the whole year, that was a big saving grace for Winnipeg, because they, as fans, you know, can hang their hat on that and at least say, for one day, that team played like we hoped they'd play.
Right. Yeah, for sure. That's exciting.
So Winnipeg, as far as I'm concerned, looking at the big picture, I would have to say that they have a lot of pressure on them to improve. A lot
of
pressure.
But the expectations are not there.
No, I don't. I don't agree. I don't agree 100% with expectations and pressure. To me, there isn't much difference between the two for me, because with expectation comes pressure, and with pressure comes expectation. They sort of go hand in hand. But yes, one can be more important than the other in making the determination.
With Winnipeg, the only thing the fans want out of them is to compete right now. Now, for this year, they want to compete now. The next year, I think there's going to be some pressure on them.
Mike, what to you next year is a level of competition that would be acceptable, on the low end for Winnipeg fans? Fighting for a playoff spot.
9-9. Yep, 9-9.
Yep.
If they miss the playoffs, if they end up fifth in the West, miss the playoffs, and they come out with a more respectable, even at 7-11, is more respectable than a 3-15.
Yep.
It happens.
You need to see
something better. So the expectations are not to win. You know what I mean? It's just improve.
Real improvement.
Just show us a
sign that we're going down.
Yes. Show me a sign that you're going in the right direction, and we're going to support you because we know that you're going in the right direction. But if they come out and they just pound the pooch and everything that they put into place falls apart, it's not going to be a good thing in that town.
They have two big games against Saskatchewan, and I think it'd be great for them to not only just win at home in general, but I think it'd be huge for them to beat Saskatchewan in those two games, the Banjo Bowl and the one mid-August. That would be huge for Winnipeg fans. I think they'd kind of go home happy at the end of the year if they could pull that off.
Well, when you say that, that's a little less than a third of the way to what Chris is saying would make it reasonable.
Right.
And an improvement.
Exactly.
Right? Because
three times that is six wins. Yeah.
Yep.
I think six wins would be a major victory for Winnipeg this year. Coming up from three, doubling it to six, knowing that we're going in the right direction and that the future looks shiny, I think would be really good. But if they come out and lay an egg, man, I just don't want to see it.
Well,
I don't want to see the fallout.
The other thing is that for Winnipeg, and why a six or a seven win would be good, because there's not going to be the Edmonton Eskimos of last year. The team is going to be better. I think we can all agree with that. The team is going to be better, which means it's going to be harder for Winnipeg to get wins.
Because
the opposition that was equal to them is better as well. So they need almost to stay in the same place. They almost have to improve to end up in the same place and not worse.
But if you look at what happened last year, I think Edmund took most of the games from Winnipeg.
There you go.
So Winnipeg got their three wins elsewhere.
Okay.
They did.
So
they beat Montreal.
I don't. They beat Montreal. They beat Saskatchewan. Who else did they beat?
I think it was Calgary, guys.
I'm looking at the schedule right now, so I'll tell
you.
Okay,
guys, we have someone else in the room. Hello, how's it going?
It wasn't Edmonton that they was beaten.
Who just joined us?
Oh, it's me, Manasse.
Hey, Manasse, how you doing?
Oh, hey, bud. Yep.
Well, you came right in time. We were just talking about Winnipeg, and what we're doing, Manasse, is we're discussing the level of pressure on each team in the CFL. And we just went through the East, and the majority of us felt that Hamilton had the most pressure on them. I think Mike felt that Montreal had more pressure on them than Hamilton.
It was Kelly.
No, it was Kelly, okay. But the point is, Hamilton and Montreal, more pressure on them. Toronto was next with the most pressure on them. And, of course, the Red Blacks, not as much pressure, but a lot of pressure, very close to Toronto by virtue of everybody's belief that they're probably going to have the best expansion team, you know, ever. And by saying that, some fans might actually think that they might have a shot at making the playoffs, which means that's a lot of pressure on them as well.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you think the four in the East would shake out pressure-wise? Who has, which team in the East has the most pressure on them this coming season? Pressure,
yeah,
anticipation, expectation?
Yep, I agree with Hamilton by far. It's pretty much the same order, except I would put Ottawa ahead of Toronto. And the reason is, you know, them going out and getting Henry Burris and giving him a max contract and the way they've gone after a lot of guys. I think they, like, internally, I think they expect themselves to be in the playoffs. You know, when you pay that kind of money for a quarterback, you expect to be in the postseason. So, and, you know, the Argos took a lot of hits. So I feel like the Argos, in a way, it's like they won it. They won the 100th Grey Cup, and they did that whole thing, and it's like, you know, I don't think there's that much pressure on them. I think
there isn't pressure on them right now, Manasse, because of the ownership thing is a giant distraction.
Right.
Yeah.
I think they'll be fine until they move into the new BMO. Once they move into BMO Field and everything's in place, then the expectations will be through the roof again. But until then, I think they're just in limbo.
I think you're right. The expectations, once the team are purchased by, you know, MLSE and they purchased first, the pressure will start to go up from what it will be this year. Because I think this year is one of those years, the throwaway year.
It's coasting.
Well, not coasting. It's just they're going to have to start figuring out how they're going to, you know, first of all, they got to figure out who's going to be working for the team. You know what I mean? When the new owners come in,
big, huge.
We can talk a lot about, you know, new owners moving in and keeping all the people, but we know that's not always true. So that kind of thing will release a lot of pressure. But once they're purchased by MLSE, the pressure will be strong. And then, like, I think I agree with you guys, and I think you're right, that once they move into BMO, then the pressure's really going to go through the roof.
Huge.
Oh, yeah.
So it's going
to
be a
Toronto
kind of...
has to come. We expect them to be the centerpiece of the CFL. It's Toronto. It's the big kahuna, right? We expect them. Right now we don't, because everything in the indication says that they're not, and they haven't been for a long time. But once they move into their new stadium, they get their new ownership, everything starts to fall in place. We'd expect them to be the centerpiece of the CFL. We do.
Holy,
and we should. Crap.
I mean, is it not enough that we Argo fans have to put pressure on our team? That now you have to, too? Now you're going to put pressure on us now? Is that like a ploy to make us lose because you're just trying to inundate us? You know, on the thing with pressure.
Yes, it is.
I'd like to also add a point about pressure, and then we'll go back to Winnipeg. Guys, don't you think that there are some players, some organizations that handle pressure better than others, which we can discuss after? You know what I mean? Because some organizations and players fold under pressure. Other organizations and players seem to excel under pressure.
Or thrive.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know? So as we talk about pressure, we want the listeners to understand that that doesn't mean that's what we think the teams are going to do. We're just saying a factor. Now, the other factor is how the team reacts to that pressure, which is very, very important. So in the West, we've got Winnipeg, and you came in just in time, and I say we're talking about Winnipeg. Very briefly, I feel there's pressure on them to play better at home, which puts a lot of pressure on them. The most important thing about that team is they brought a new stadium in, and it would be nice. I know they won the Banjo Bowl, but it would be nice if they were a little more competitive at home during the regular season. And that's the kind of pressure they're going to be facing, I think. That's, you know, play well at home.
Yep. You want me to say something, or is somebody else going to?
Yeah. I'm waiting for you, Manasse. You're taking the Winnipeg side right now.
Right. So I guess with the Bombers, you know, they brought in a couple of new guys, but people in Winnipeg, they're not really sold on the team. All my family that I've talked to, there's a lot of pessimism in town, and there's not really that much excitement yet, but people are willing to give them a chance. So I think that opening game, the Thursday nighter, the season opener against Toronto at home, that's their chance to come out and make a statement, show just how much better they are. And I expect them to win. I expect them to win big, too. I think they're going to blow the Argos out. I think they're going to get off to like a 2-1 start, and then it's the big showdown August 7th at home against Saskatchewan. And that's going to be the ultimate sort of prove-it-to-the-fan type game where if they get off to a good start, get in that game, it'll be a packed house. There'll be huge attention, and that's the game where they can pretty much, you know, set the tone for the rest of the season. And if they win it, you know, if you go back and remember 2011 with the whole Swaggerville thing, basically they got off to that hot start. The fans got excited. The building was packed every night. It was loud. And then that momentum just carried them to the Grey Cup. So I think it can happen again. That's why I'm looking at that August 7th game against the Riders. That's the pivotal game that's going to determine what type of season they're going to have. So I have high expectations. I think they're going to make it to the playoffs, and they may even make a run to the Grey Cup and shock the whole world. So we'll see.
Hey, Manasseh, going for the Winnipeg and know what's going on down in Winnipeg, what you think the emergence of Mike Sims Walker last year, man, do you think it's going to carry over to this season where he's going to be
the
most deadliest receiver over there?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, with Drew Willie, and I think Drew Willie, we all agree, is an upgrade on what they had. And you combine him and Nick Moore, Corey Watson's coming back, and they all of a sudden have a somewhat decent offense. I mean, you look around, you know, they got a strong running back, Will Ford, all-star year. And I expect Mike Sims-Walker to be one of the top receivers in the league. And everyone will be surprised. Everyone says, oh, they don't have talent. It's just they didn't have a quarterback there. And the offensive line was terrible. So they upgraded those two things. And once you do that, now the rest of the talent that they've had will be showcased better. And people will see that they're actually not that far off. So I expect him to be competitive.
Because I said that about Mike Sims-Walker last year, man. You know, they brought him in, and they didn't throw him into the fire. They let him get acclimated with the CFL rules, being a CFL receiver. And once he learned the game, man, he came out on all cylinders, and he made his money, man. He made his money last year, and he actually helped them out in that offense. Even though their offense was bad with the shuffling the quarterbacks, him and Will Ford were the bright spots of that offense.
Exactly. And, you know, like you said, like the defenses are going to have trouble picking between are they going to double Nick Moore or are they going to double Mike Sims-Walker. And if you do that, you got you got Clarence Denmark and Corey Watson underneath too, you know. So they're going to have all type of matchup nightmares for defenses. And it's just Drew Willie, man. If Drew Willie can just be above average, they're going to have a good offense. That's all they need. They don't even be spectacular. Just be above average. Be Buck Pierce in 2011, and that team will be solid.
Joining us now, John Granger's in the room as well. And
evening, gentlemen. Evening.
So,
evening.
Okay, so John, what we've done is we're listing the pressure for each team in the league. And what we did is we sorted out where we felt the most pressure in the East was. And unanimously, I guess, guys, Hamilton. Except, no, then Kelly said Montreal because of the fan. And
Montreal.
I actually changed it to Montreal because of the pressure to bring the fans back. Because Montreal fans are really fickle. They only support a winner. And if the team doesn't win, the fans don't show up. Then, of course, Hamilton. And Toronto and Winnipeg, and there was a difference of opinion between Ottawa, the Red Blacks. There was a difference of opinion that Ottawa's expectations are a little higher because of than the Argos because of the money they spent, and they appear to want to make the playoffs. The Argos, I feel more than the rest of them, but my opinion, the pressure is not as much on them because right now, guys like me and you are more concerned. Well, don't know yet who's going to own the team. We're waiting for that shoe to drop so that we can start
Did you guys talk about that? Did you talk about the shoe that's dropping? Well, this is step four, what happened today, of step five. If we do the rewind, I told you fellas that MLSC had a, you know, 5-6-step program here that they were dealing with, and the Raptors, then the TFC, then the stadium, now with the MLSC, I mean with the Leafs, the final is going to be the Argos, and here it is next week. Okay, if they're not going to do it over the weekend deal, you know, Good Friday and everything, by next Thursday, Friday, I'll be surprised if it's not out by then. Okay, the pressure is on right now. They got everything cleaned out. Once the Leafs do their final locker cleanup stuff, the Raptor playoff thing is one of those unexpected things that they're, you know, they're going to get enough attention with it, but they got to make the move at some point. And right now with the ticket drive starting up with the preseason, and, you know, hopefully this will motivate everybody to kind of get back on the table and get the contract settled with. But, again, step four, step five coming up. Should be by next week.
Okay.
Which means there isn't that much pressure on the team because, really, the pressure's on to complete the deal.
Well, the pressure is going to be, I think, Frank, you know, and I'm thinking about it, being in there, the players are going to be jacked about it because, you know, they're looking at better resource of advertisement for themselves, getting themselves out there. To them, it's all plus, plus, plus. Now, to the management side of it, you know, pins and needles in the front office, of course. I don't see them doing anything drastic to them for this year, at least. It wouldn't make business sense, okay? They just can't uproot with what these guys in the front office have had connections with the community, with the Huddle Up program, and, you know, just the outreach that they do. It would just not make sense, business sense, to disrupt the whole, you know, front office. Now,
and Lewicki has established that he's a patient guy, and he waits for the opportunity to make the move when the move can happen. You know, each time he's made these changes, he's made them when the team or the interest, you know, it, actually with the Raptors, it happened because, you know, the opportunity came to bring a jury in, and of course, they weren't happy with the existing GM, and they tried finding a place for him, and he didn't want to fit in a different way, so he was let go. And And now with TFC, the same thing, John. They had an opportunity. They said, you know what, our team is not that good. Let's see what we can do. And they've done something with it. And now the focus of attention is on, you know, the Leafs, which is great. And you're right. I agree. The Argos are next with their focus of attention. And the pressure that we feel right now with the Argos, John, isn't comparable to what it will be I believe it's already done, like you, the team announces that they're owned by MLSC. The pressure will just get even higher.
But you know what, Frank and guys, the one thing about these the entities that they have right now with the franchises is that those franchises weren't doing good. They didn't win any championships.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a good field presence, okay, or court presence or ice presence. With the Argos, that's the one thing that has always been kind of something that they can get together and do right, is the stuff on the field. Of course, you know, if they get the right players and so forth, but they've never gone, you know, decades without wins or Grey Cup appearances or, you know, that's the benefit of being a Toronto sports fan and being an Argo fan, guys. And, you know, if other people listening from the other across the country, this is the one thing that I cherish. Personally, I'm a huge Toronto sports fan. I, you know, support all of them. But the Argos are the only ones that give me that rush. The Blue Jays did 2 decades ago, okay? But the Argos continuously give it to me at least within eight years, okay? And that is amazing as a sports fan. You want to feel that championship feeling. What we did, Frank, and what they did, you know, 2012, is unbelievable. Okay, I will never that high of winning at home, and the season and the way it went, and just everything all together, and being part of the Grey Cup festivities and all that stuff. That is something that I think I can still kind of ride that wave for probably another 2 years. So
and,
if something
that's
happens
what, John,
this year,
that's what we talked about with Saskatchewan. Is that that's why I think the pressure is less on Saskatchewan as well. But yeah, you're right. So then the Argos are in pretty good shape. Now we're moving on, John, to the Western Division and Winnipeg, and this one will interest you as well. How much pressure is on Winnipeg? They won one key game last year, which was the Banjo Bowl at home, and you're a big fan of the stadium. Do you think they have a lot of pressure? Maybe even the most pressure they have is to play well at home because of how poorly they played last year at home?
Well, you know, the coaching staff is doing their thing. If you guys read The Sun today, there was a big article, two-page article on the Bombers and O'Shea and how he's got everybody focused. And, you know, it's the right stuff to say. Everybody says the right thing. But being, you know, the rookie right now for him. I think it's something that he's going to take, you know, and run with it. He's got the coaches all pumped up. I mean, still, you know, the quarterback situation is going to be tough for them to rectify there. And the pressure is always on in Winnipeg. Those fans are great. They deserve, you know, better. The stadium is unbelievable. Can't wait to go and see it. Yeah, there's pressure, I think, in every CFL city. You know what I mean? I think the first East, I didn't get the answer, but I think whoever said Hamilton, I think they have a little bit of pressure going there. Montreal is one of those things that the people are going to always kind of support. They won't show up, but the season ticket base will always turn up, which is really the moneymaker. And then the walking crowd, you know, they pick it up. They'll do fine. Hamilton has the problem. But back to Winnipeg. Yeah, it's a big pressure cooker in Winnipeg, guys. The fans want it now. They don't want to go through it. I mean, think about it. Beautiful stadium, delayed by a year, and then you throw a thing like they did last year. What do you guys think? Of it's awful. It's terrible being a Winnipeg fan right now. And, yeah, there's a lot of pressure on them.
Okay, who hasn't mentioned? Okay, I don't think Kelly, you've talked about Winnipeg. What kind of pressures are on Winnipeg?
Same stuff, guys. Basically, just agree with everything that was said about them.
What about the coach? Is there any pressure on the coach, the head coach?
Well, sure there is, but actually, one guy I'll pick out is Drew Willey, just because I know him. He's a former Rider, and you know, he's got a mountain of pressure on him. I mean, there's a lot of people. Like, I was talking to a couple guys today, Bomber fans on site, and, yeah, they want Kevin Glenn. I mean, they're calling for him, and, you know, that's a lot of pressure on a guy. So, yeah, I just think that they do have a lot of pressure. I'm not putting them number one in the West. I'll reserve where I put them until we get a few more teams in the mix.
Yeah, we'll talk about who we think in order after we're done reviewing each team,
exactly.
Just like we did with these,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, so
yep.
Chris, did you say anything about the Winnipeg Blue Bombers?
My expectations for Winnipeg are bordering on zero. I really don't think they're going to come out of the gate all that well. They're not going to do all that well. Manasseh says that they're going to rip through the thing. If they take out Saskatchewan on that August 7th game, I can see that being advantageous. But they're in a tough road right there where that's the first of three games against the Riders in 5 weeks, another one against BC and Toronto. It's going to be a monstrous uphill battle for Winnipeg through the midsection of the season. And they're either going to sink or swim, and I don't see them swimming real well or hard. So that's kind of my bet on that. Now, Kelly, on the three wins last year, the other two were Montreal, both of them.
Yeah. Oh, okay, thank you. Yeah, I thought they had beaten Montreal, and
they beat them once early and once late. They beat them once early and once late.
So yeah, I see Winnipeg ending up in the bottom of the West, and expectations from me are not high. Do they have a lot of pressure? Hell yeah, they have a lot of pressure. Brand new stadium, they got to make a payment on this. The fans have got to show up to so they can get the gate to make their payment, and.
That's
Winnipeg fans are great, but they're disheartened right now. And, I mean, just even on our group, CFL is, the Bomber fans are not speaking highly of their team.
I would put them in the same boat as Montreal with that type of pressure. Is they can't take another losing year for their season ticket base. I mean, that's that same type of Montreal-type pressure right now. Like, Winnipeggers
difference in Winnipeg, don't you think, though, that they'll still come to the game?
No, they won't. No, there's been a lot of people that have said, you know, one more year of this crap and I'm out.
Wow.
That's mad they were last year. Yeah.
That's what I love.
I think Edmonton's going to be last. Jones is going to screw everything up in Edmonton. His power tripping, his coaches are going to disown him.
Okay, hang on. John, we're going east-west. So we have to start. Are we finished? Did everybody get a chance to say something about Winnipeg? Mike, I don't remember you saying anything about Winnipeg. Are you there, Mike? Okay, he's still here. I see his.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I was, Mike,
I didn't hear you say anything about Winnipeg. I didn't hear you say anything about Winnipeg. What kind of expectations?
I'm not looking for them to be at the bottom of the list. I'm looking for them to compete, and they probably be in the playoffs. But I'm gonna tell you this. I'm gonna go back to what Kelly said, that the fans are calling for Kevin Glenn. Believe me. Winnipeg is trying to probably put a package together so they can get Kevin Glenn back in the fold just in case Willie falters. They have a backup that can take them to the promised land, that know the offense, and know that the guys will play for them. So they're going to put something together to try to get Glenn. I just love
that it's Willie or Wonnie right now.
You know, and I'm like Manasseh, if – Willie can have a subpar year, I mean, be above average, get the ball to the receivers, and the offense get the clicking. I mean, you know, I think they make the playoffs, man. I think they have a better chance than Edmonton, and I like Edmonton.
Right.
Yeah, all well, right. That's so, pressure.
Well, yep. the pressure in Winnipeg is to win because of the stadium, I guess, is basically what the general the general feeling is here. And that's pretty fair. Manasseh, you had a chance. Did you get a chance to finish talking about Winnipeg? Because that's around when John called.
Yeah, I just want to make one point. That's all. No, I agree with everything everyone said so far. Just, you know, the one thing for Christopher, too, is it comes down to the fan support, flat out. Because if the fans get excited, that's why I said those first three games are so important. If the people get behind it and that stadium gets full, the two games last year that the stadium was sold out, the home opener and the Banjo Bowl, the team played so far over their heads it was unreal. And that stadium, if it's packed, the home support they get, it takes them up like 10 notches. And if they can get that place packed, get the people excited, that team is going to go to the Grey Cup, I'm telling you. Because no one's going to go in there and win. With that defense that Gary Etcheverry is bringing, they're going to be a fun team to watch, and I think everybody's sleeping on them. Really, I don't know how Christopher, you could think they're going to be last. That's crazy. Come on, Edmonton is a fire waiting to happen. I mean, I agree with John wholeheartedly on Edmonton. I think.
Okay, well, let's
Jones
stay away
already,
from Edmonton for now. We got to go to Saskatchewan next. If we're done, we're moving west. Remember, guys, let's just try to head in one direction and try to go. Keep the straight and narrow going. All right, so Saskatchewan. Kelly, we'll put you last, and we'll start with Mike.
Sure.
Mike, Saskatchewan. Oh, no, wait, Mike, you're a Saskatchewan fan, too. Okay, let's go to Manasseh, the former Saskatchewan fan. Saskatchewan.
No, yeah, I know we were going at it before about how, you know, I thought they were going to be bad, but they're going to be good, man, I'm telling you. I think they're going to be the second. They may even end up number one again. Like we said last week, Chaz Schillings, the receiver who came from Oakland, he's going to be a huge playmaker. By the end of the year, even though most of you don't know him now, he'll be considered one of the top guys by the end of the season, and he should replace Dressler. But all they need is a running back, and I don't know who they're going to go to. You know, Jock Sanders left.
Schillings
signed
with Saskatchewan, huh?
Yep. Yeah,
wow.
He's going to be great. Yeah, I saw some videos of him at minicamp. He looks like a pro's pro. Like he's like the prototypical receiver, and
Cadillac.
He's got, you know, the size, speed, everything. Yeah, so
yep.
People will know him by the end of the year. He's going to be considered like he's going to be one of those guys that's going to take the league by storm. You can tell, but I don't know what they're going to do at running back.
I just want to say, remember Terrence Nunn and who else? Elijah Harper or whatever his name was last year. You know,
mm-hmm.
So there's these guys that, you know, coming from the NFL with huge expectations. Some of them just don't pan out. But I really think this Ryan Smith is the actual story here. I think the signing of him and maybe even the signing of this Quebec League player, I feel bad because I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but just a CIS guy from Quebec, he might be, you know, a starting Canadian in a couple of years. That's just how good his college highlights look. And now I know he's playing against the college, you know, defense there. But, yeah, I just think that there is, you know, like Manasseh said, quite a bit of pressure on us to you know,
get up there into second and third at least and get into the playoffs and stuff. So, for sure. And I'll just kind of leave it there and reply.
There is another player that fits that mold in Montreal who amazed everybody. You know, he may not have been an ex-NFL player. He was basically a player that didn't make the NFL. Made his dad really proud at ESPN, and, you know, he came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So it's quite possible that there's always a few. You know, we talk about replacing, receivers and running backs because they're usually the American positions, and because of that, they're highly replaceable by virtue of the talent that's out there. So no one should be surprised that there's some gems out there that the NFL misses out on by virtue of all the...
It's going to be a lot of guys that the NFL are going to cut that's going to be available. So the Saskatchewan Riders are going to pick a good running back. They just going to have to figure out which one they're going to get.
Which one's ready for their game.
Mm-hmm. Because from what I'm hearing out here in the States, Indianapolis is about to cut ties with Trent Richardson.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a big move, isn't it?
Wow. Didn't they just trade a first-rounder from last year?
Yeah, they did. But then the emergence of Donald Brown during the season, and Trent Richardson couldn't even get 3.2 yards a carry. Yeah. He was a big disappointment.
But do you think that Trent Richardson really realistically is going to leave the NFL? You don't think that someone else will pick him up?
Nope.
Well, somebody might give him a try,
I don't see him dropping real quick into the CFL. I don't see him dropping into the CFL that quick.
And I'm going to tell you something, but you got to remember, Saskatchewan and Indianapolis do have ties together.
They do
have ties. And if Trent Richardson want to play ball and nobody doesn't sign him, because Trent Richardson got exposed early on when he was with Cleveland, then when he went to Indianapolis, it got worse. So a lot of these guys is a lot of these teams didn't sign their running backs and getting ready to draft younger guys. Man, he's expendable. He's expendable.
I gotcha. John, how do you feel about Saskatchewan expectations wise? You just said a magical phrase that I believe I said for the Argos. I agreed with you and you before you came on the air. I can live off the great 2012 100 Grey Cup. Can Saskatchewan do the same, their fans?
Listen, that was a great ride that they had, and I'm just not feeling it for the Rider Nation this year. I'm going to keep saying it. I thought Sheets was like 40% of the team for me. He took away the options that the defense had.
But how does that affect the fans' expectations, John? We're not talking about how the team's going to do. We do that all the time.
Are we questioning the right expectation?
The Saskatchewan fans. Yes. What level?
Every year, even when they're win one game, they expect to win the Grey Cup. Come on, when they know they suck, they expect to win. They're diehards. They're the best fans. Come on.
All right, so their expectations are always high.
I didn't even know we were asking that. What was the question? Wow.
Well, I think that was
some Dairy Queen ice cream. It's great.
John, if you're not eating while you're on the show, you're not on the show. The only reason you're not on the show when it comes to food, you're making it.
Oh, man.
Hey, Frank, and I want to go back to something real quick, and I'm going to only take a couple of seconds. And by me finding out that they just signed Schilling from Oakland, oh, man, that really changed my perception on how the offense is going to look. I mean, deep threat. Man, this guy is the real deal, the real deal. Yeah. And they must offer him some nice money.
Do you think the fans are aware
of
how good these guys are? Do you think because, you know, that's what builds up the expectation. Are they, for the most part, a secret? Are these moves a secret? And the fans don't know enough to get excited? Or is it just like John said, automatically they're always high expectations? And hang on a second. I keep forgetting to add Bruce John Inch's input. He picks Hamilton as first as far as expectations are concerned. Montreal, Ottawa, and then the Argos suck from the Cup. my West is BC, Saskatchewan, Calgary, Edmonton, and Winnipeg.
Pass that on,
please. Okay. And he says Saskatchewan will be second in the West. I as far as pressure is concerned, Saskatchewan. Now we can get the diehards to talk about it. We'll start with the new Saskatchewan fan, Mike Townsend. The expectations in Saskatchewan, how should they be for the fans?
Well, for the fans, I mean, you know, expectations went down a little when Corey Sheets and Dressler had signed with the NFL teams. But and they lost a lot of key players. But Saskatchewan, if you're placing all the players that they lost, especially you lose Dressler, you go get Shillings, a bigger receiver, a playmaker. And a lot of guys in Canada does not watch the NFL. So when you bring an NFL player to the CFL and saying that he has to, you know, get in tune, this guy is going to come in, step in, and be a playmaker right off top. I don't think he's going to need no adjustment. And,
How does he rank beside a Chad Johnson in your mind?
Wow.
Oh, he's way better.
Yes. Yes. And I'm surprised that they were able – they had to offer him some good money to come to Saskatchewan.
And you were over the moon with Chad Johnson playing for Montreal. I'd hate to think what that means for this kid.
Yes, sir. Oh, man. I'm telling you. And like I said, if you guys do not watch the NFL, and I know Manasseh could agree with me, they don't know about some of the receivers that can come in and don't need to learn the game. They can just step in right away and take control. And he's that playmaker, man. He's that playmaker.
So how does that fit into the expectations? Do you think the fans are aware of the talent they're getting? And is it because of the expectations of the Saskatchewan fans that the team knows they can only bring in a lot of quality or – you know, the jig is up.
I don't think they know about the quality player that they're bringing in, but I'm telling you like this, Darren Durant is licking his chops and can't wait to throw that ball to Shillings. I'm telling you that right now.
And
he's going
to
have a target. And then you got you still got Todd Smith. So, I mean, the receiver core is going to be better. And then you got Getzlaff. It's going to be better, man. I mean, come on, man. Shillings, oh, man. Oh, man. That's all I got to say.
Which feeds into the sermon preaching that Kelly Bale, I'm not trying to make fun of religion, but the constant preaching that he has faith in Brandon Taman as the GM. And this sort of speaks to what you've always said, Kelly, which is why the expectations are always, I guess, so high in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've built, kind of like a factory in Saskatchewan, and it starts, you know, at the grassroots level. And, you know, the secret to our success is we've been able to develop some high-quality football players right here at home and scout them and, you know, shelter them and retain them and bring them aboard. But that's a challenge that we're facing this year is we've taken a hit in that department. We've lost three starting Canadian players. So we definitely have some work to do in that regard. But, and that's the pressure for me is can we replace those Canadian guys? I'm really excited for the draft. I mean, we're sitting actually pretty well considering that we've just come off the Grey Cup. We've swapped for a couple higher position picks. And, that's basically, I'm going to put the pressure that the province always puts on them as well. And, you know, for that reason, I'll talk about them as maybe second in the West for pressure. I'm always going to pick BC because they're hosting the Cup and they're kind of hurting for a victory. So, and they actually, you know, people have the ability to, you know, get behind them because they've got a good product.
Another message coming from Steve Oh My Myers. He's listening from his hotel room in Ohio, and he figures Hamilton, Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto have, in that order, have the pressure. I'm surprised that he put Ottawa ahead of Montreal, but we'll just take him at that. And I'll also mention that he says Saskatchewan has the most pressure on them with Calgary second, BC third, Edmonton, and then Winnipeg. So just to pay attention to the folks.
But it's the disrespect.
No, it's not about Manasseh. You're misunderstanding the conversation here. Okay. The conversation here tonight is, and it was Kelly's idea, and I kind of liked it, and it seemed that the guys were willing to go with it. From a fan's perspective, which fans have the most to expect? And I'll remind everybody, you're listening to the Candid Frank live show. Joining us, of course, in studio, of course, Christopher Jones, John Granger, Kelly Bill. Yeah, sure I do. Kelly Bale, I phoned you, for goodness sake. What do you mean? Mike Townsend, and, of course, Manasseh, Gilmadine. And, we're just having a nice conversation about what fans expect this year. Which fans have more reason to expect more than others? And why do we think so? To review what we've discussed thus far is, I think the biggest point in the East is that Montreal – has to win just to keep the fans coming. That's just the nature of that beast. It goes without saying that Hamilton is the team that all the fans that they have, based on it has been said here, and I must reiterate it, that Kent Austin has a lot of respect in this conversation, a great general manager, and as Jonesy said, winning is what he does. So them being top in expectations, I think, is fair. You can go Montreal, Toronto, Ottawa, whichever way you want to go. But at the point, that really is the important thing. In the West, we started discussing Saskatchewan, and like Toronto, they just won. So you would think there wouldn't be that much pressure on them. But I think they're a unique situation, like John Granger said, where the expectations are always high in Saskatchewan. Which, brings on the need for a guy like Brandon Taman, who makes moves, who does find the right kind of players to bring in. So that's what we're talking about. If you want to give us a call, you can give us a call at 714-242-5250, and we'll move on. And, of course, we're at Saskatchewan. So I didn't forget you, Christopher Jones. Saskatchewan.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
If I'm a fan, if I was a Riders fan,
that's a big if.
That's a big if. Okay, there's two ways to look at this, and there's the devil's advocate on both sides. Saskatchewan has lost 20 players this year, and three or four coaches, so they lost the most this year. What they lose was their quarterback. They didn't lose their O-line. And every other piece is replaceable. Where they have lost the most, in which I haven't seen a lot of improvement, is in the defensive side of things. So I think their offense is going to be sound and everything else. So if you just look at it as a numbers game, they're on the minus side of things. 20 players down is huge, especially as Kelly puts it, as a handful of Canadians are gone. So that's hard to replace. But they did keep a good chunk of their offense together, and they've replaced what they did lose with some good pieces. The running back is the wild card, whether they get Sheets back or whether they, which I don't think they will, not right away, and or replace it with somebody else, which is very doable. We were looking doom and gloom on the Riders earlier on, and the expectations of the fans would have been like, oh, my God, what the hell has just happened? We just won a Grey Cup, and we have this mass exodus. So, the expectations of pressure would have been huge at that point in time. But in the same token, is I think that Taman is filling the voids quite nicely, and I think things are going to work out well for them. They might not be as well as they did last year, but, it's hard to say one way or the other. I'm not putting them at missing the playoffs quite as bad as what I did originally. Okay. And I think the fans would be in the same position at this point in time, or at least the knowledgeable fans are going to turn around and say, you know what, we're not that bad.
We got to move quickly, Chris. We're down to 10 minutes, and we've got a few teams left. So I'm sorry if I cut you off, but we want to get to BC.
Yeah,
and I don't want to insult you by not getting to BC, right? So has everybody had enough to say about Saskatchewan?
Yep.
Okay. Let's keep moving. Let's keep moving west. And I guess I should go Calgary and then go south. I guess we'll go Calgary.
Edmonton
really quickly, guys.
Calgary is south.
Yeah. Okay. So do you want to go? Okay. We'll go Edmonton. Real quick, guys, in a very short burst, John, Edmonton, you've made it clear you think that they're going to self-destruct under the coaching mantle of Chris Jones.
I just, we felt it here in Toronto, Frank. I mean, you know, we talked about it last show. I don't, five games, and they're going to have enough. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay,
sorry,
fair
Edmonton.
Enough. And their expectations, do you think the fans on the opposite end of the spectrum will be expecting a lot more than they should?
Oh, yeah.
Are they? Okay. Manasseh, Edmonton.
Edmonton. Grease fire, no expectations, doesn't matter. Next.
Okay. Mike Townsend, Edmonton.
Going to bomb. Press Dams is going to get pissed and he's going to get traded. End of story.
Kelly?
I'm putting Edmonton, below Winnipeg for expectations in the West.
What expectations do they have? We'll do a quick wrap on the order at the end.
What
kind of expectations?
Edmonton are similar to Winnipeg, and it's to improve and to win at home for the fans and to make sure that they aren't feeding unhappy customers, and that's it.
Okay, who have we missed?
Me.
Which one of you guys have
missed?
Go, speak.
Edmonton's going to do a lot better than anybody expects them to do. Mike Riley, they were the best 4-14 team the CFL has ever seen. 5% better would have put them well over a 500 team last year. Mike Riley is wonderful. I don't believe John Granger is correct on Chris Jones. The reason why I don't believe that is because when Chris Jones is free reign to run his own show, he's going to be able to do it. He can't work within certain confines that were brought to him in Toronto, and it didn't work for him in Toronto, but it did work for him in Montreal.
Maniac. He's an ego
Well,
maniac.
So be it, buddy. Let me finish, John, please.
Mm.
Okay, we're in a hurry, and we don't need that.
Yep, we are in a hurry.
Exactly.
That's my point. Is Chris Jones, when he's got free reign, because he really doesn't have a strong GM, he's basically running the show in Edmonton, and when he runs the show, then he's going to be able to run it the way that he wants to do it. And, yes, he may be an egomaniac, but that has worked for him in the past. It didn't work for him when there was multiple egomaniacs in the room.
There you go.
Expectations for Edmonton are high.
Let's go south to Calgary, where expectations, in my opinion, are always high. Oh, I didn't say anything about Edmonton. Edmonton, the expectations in Edmonton are to again, just like we said about Winnipeg, I think they have expectations that the team should make the playoffs, or at least fight for the playoffs, whether it be in the West or in the East, and that goes for Winnipeg as well. And as far as Jones is concerned, I think the expectations are high for him by the fans because of his pedigree. He did come from Montreal where Grey Cups were won. He came from Toronto where a Grey Cup was won, and therefore the fans figure they've got a good head coach, and they have every right to believe that they do have a great head coach. We'll just see how that pans out. So we move on now south to Calgary, where expectations, I'll start with them, where expectations are always high. This is another one of those organizations that quietly has a fan base that always expects so much. And it's a team that comes through very often. And like some of the other teams, has a wonderful general manager whom you can't help but have high expectations of, and Huffnagel. You can't help but have high expectations if you're in Calgary. Okay, Christopher, you were last time. Calgary.
I think Calgary's got most of their pieces in place. I'm really happy with the fact they got Adrian McPherson. I think the fans are always expecting good things out of Calgary, and Calgary, as a rule, always delivers. Huffnagel is one of the best GMs that the CFL's had in a while, and I think most of their pieces are still in play. Next.
Mike.
I got to just say one word, Cornish.
Yep.
There you go. But I thought you would have said something about the quarterback.
Nope.
Okay. Kelly.
Calgary, I think the expectations are huge. Their team is really turning it up in social media, and that tells me that they're basically attacking the fan base and challenging them to come out. And like I said before, you have to be accountable for that type of media campaign.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, so I think people in Calgary are saying online, you know, Grey Cup or bust, that type of comments. We all know that they don't have to finish first in the season to do it in the playoffs, but that's what they've failed to do for the last 4 years. So,
well, if
they need
any
to get it done.
Yeah, and if any team's going to be on a high horse, it's going to be the Stampeders. John, your turn.
You know, Calgary's going to be strong every year. I think it's going to be between them and BC again. I think they're going to finish first. I like Calgary.
Okay. All right, and the fans expect them to finish first as well, so that would mean high expectations.
Well, yeah, sure.
Okay. Who have I missed on Calgary?
Manasseh.
Nobody? Oh, Manasseh. Nope. Sorry, Manasseh. Calgary.
Okay, so fan base, fair weather, city doesn't really care about the team. Number two, overrated, old team. Defense is old. John Cornish is the Carmelo Anthony of the CFL. He puts up big stats in the regular season, and in the playoffs, nothing. This team, I guarantee you, right now, will miss the playoffs next year. I know it sounds crazy, they're missing the postseason. And it's because Drew Tate's going to get hurt, then they're going to have this inconsistency at quarterback all year, back and forth, and then Cornish ultimately is going to poop his pants, and that's all I've got to say. Thank you. I'm done.
I hear you, and we could do a whole show on disappointments, on anticipated disappointments too. That'll be one for later. Next up, Kelly.
No, I've said my bit. Let's move on to BC.
Who did I miss? Okay. All right, so now we arrive at BC. So we've got ourselves a whole 4 minutes to discuss BC. We'll start with Manasseh. Manasseh, you like BC. You like what they've got. You've always been fond of their defense. And do you think their fans have plenty of reason to be, put pressure on them? Or is there a lot of pressure on BC? They're hosting the Grey Cup.
Okay, yeah, I mean, they should be excited. I think Christopher Jones can tell us how beat the Lions are viewed in Vancouver, but they have the most talented team in the CFL, hands down. It's not even close. They're stacked on offense. They're stacked on defense. They have one of the best quarterbacks, one of the best GMs in Wally Buono. The only question is the coaching staff. You know, Kari Jones is going to be under a lot of pressure to deliver on the offensive side, and Mike Benavides is probably on the hot seat. I think for them, if they don't land the number one seed and at least make it to the Grey Cup, I think he's going to get fired at the end of the year. So there's huge pressure on them top down, and I expect them to be in the Grey Cup.
Mike Townsend?
I expect them to be in the Grey Cup also, but my thing is if Lule goes down, BC goes down.
Yep.
And how is that affected by the pressure that's on the team?
Because they don't have no good backup quarterback.
And so the pressure's on the pressure from the fans is Lule better be healthy. Is that like the big pressure then?
I was just about to say he better be healthy, because if you throw John Beck and the rest of them scrubs in, you're looking for a long season.
Okay, John, BC.
I think they're going to be jacked. I think the players want to feel whoever was left behind from their previous one, want to get that rush. I think the CFL wants to, bring out all the bells and whistles. It's not going to go back to BC for a while. They got it too many times in such a short span. So they're going to do a nice festive Grey Cup like we've never seen before with all the good weather. And Mr. Jones over there is going to be really enjoying it because it's going to be great. I think the players are going to – I think it's going to be a good season for BC. I think they're getting Giles as a backup. I don't think that's a – terrible idea. We'll see what he does in training camp, but they have a good coach. They got a good GM. I think they're going to be strong.
And they have a lot of pressure on them because they have the Grey Cup coming in.
Yeah.
Christopher, your turn.
You know what? They've dealt with that. They've dealt with that, Frank, before. So it's just a matter of, like I said, whoever's been through it before, who's stuck around, is going to be able to kind of tutor the guys who haven't. And it's going to be better for them. I really do.
Okay, Christopher Jones, your opinion. Okay, John, let Christopher get in. It's his team, too. Christopher.
expectations in BC are going to be high, but the pressure is not going to be there. Nobody's expecting the fourth team in a row to win the Grey Cup at home. BC has won it at home twice before. Third time would be lovely, except that, you know what, it's not there. I'm not saying that we're not going to win it. I'm just saying that, you know what, the expectations of actually winning it at home are not there. Everybody expects them to be in it. Winning it would be a different ball game at all. The huge pressure on the coaching staff, I agree. Mike Benavides has not lived up to expectations at that at all. Kahari Jones is a breath of fresh air over what we have had, but he's going to have a very short leash in that aspect of things as well. I think Wally has already set up a plan of replacing everybody. I hate to say that, but I really do. I'd love to see them do it. I'm not holding my breath to see BC winning it this year. I think the players are really pissed off that it got taken away from them in Toronto and it got taken away from them in Saskatchewan. Both times they deserved to be there, and they weren't. And for whatever reasons.
Well, we're in overtime now, and we'll use this overtime moment. I want to finish as close to 11 o'clock as we can. So I'm going to say the team with the most pressure on them in the West is BC. By virtue of the talent they have and by virtue of them being the home team together, it's not just about being the home team for the Grey Cup. It is by virtue of the talent that they have. And I agree with what has been said, is that they have a great amount of talent on that team, and it's not hard to expect them to win. Next up for me is Saskatchewan, who always have pressure on them to win. And the more key players that they pick up, and if the fans understand and are that diehard like Kelly, they understand the kind of players that are coming in, that will just contribute to the pressure that's on the team to win. I think Calgary comes in third with pressure, not necessarily finishing third, but with pressure, because they have been knocking at the door so long, they have not been able to bust through that door, and they've had difficulty finishing off. As far as Winnipeg and Edmonton are concerned, I think they both have the same kind of pressure on them, and that is, which is to make the playoffs. I think their fans want to see their team in the playoffs. I think there's more pressure on Winnipeg, because Winnipeg fans aren't as tolerant as the Edmonton fans. The Edmonton fans are far more supportive of their team. When you consider the kind of zoo that was there, the insane carnival that happened last year, and they put up with it, I think that should tell you something all by itself. So that's the way I see the pressure in the West. Manasseh, you want to go next?
Yeah. So we're ranking the West, or how are we?
Yeah.
Yes.
Which teams have the most pressure on them?
Yeah, it's clearly the Saskatchewan. Like, to John's point, there's pressure on them no matter what. I think Winnipeg's number two, and the pressure comes down to from the fans, is the fans' awareness and the fact that they even care about the team. So BC's the most talented, but I'd say they have the least amount of pressure because the fans only have a casual sort of awareness of the team, from what I can see. Same thing in Calgary and Edmonton. So the top, all the pressure's in the Prairies and Winnipeg and Saskatchewan. Because the fans live and die
by the team. So the biggest pressure game is going to be the Banjo Bowl.
No, without a doubt. No question.
All right, John, how about you? How about you, John?
Regards to what?
The pressure
on... Who's got the most pressure?
Yeah.
Are we still on that? Okay.
Rank them now. Rank them now. Now we rank them. Now I want to hear in your opinion, which team has the most pressure on them down to which has the least pressure on them in the West?
The hometown team hosting the Grey Cup always has the most pressure, no matter what they say. The repeat team, who wants to repeat, would go in second. The team that didn't make it and was one step out, like Calgary or Toronto, would rank in those other pressures because they were Eastern finalists. And the one that didn't make it, and made it and didn't win it, is Hamilton. So they kind of squeeze in between the 2 and 3 space.
Huh?
If you get all
okay.
That.
Yeah, I got it, John. You didn't answer the... You totally went... Never mind. It's okay. We'll just move on. Who's next? Who wants to take it next? Who wants to follow up that?
Yeah, I'll pick that up. I think it's going to be BC number one for for the same reasons everybody's saying, is talent and home Grey Cup. And number two, I'm actually going to slide Calgary into there. I think they got a lot of things to work out, you know, a few seasons of bruises to work out this year. And I think the fans are putting the pressure on by saying Grey Cup or bust. So I'm going to put them in number two, just barely ahead of the Riders. And I'm going to put Winnipeg next because obviously they want to improve. But Edmonton wants to improve in the same light, but I just feel that their fans are a little more forgiving than the Winnipeggers at this point.
Mike?
Most pressure, BC, Saskatchewan, Calgary, and then Winnipeg.
And no pressure on Edmonton. No pressure on Edmonton.
I don't think they've had pressure for like 10 years.
I don't think
right,
so either.
Right. Thank you, Manasse. And the only pressure Edmonton has been number fifth, that pressure is, man, you got the best receiver in the league, man. You got to get that guy some help.
Yeah.
Because, after being around, man, with that team for years and you know, they used to be competitive. It's not saying that they're not competitive, but he needs some help, man. And if he was to leave that team and say, go further west to BC or head east to Toronto, come on, man. Look what that guy could do for them teams, man.
Oh, I know.
You got to
imagine.
Before we can talk about stamps in a minute. Let's finish. Who hasn't had a chance to rank the guys, the teams?
Me.
Go for it, Chris. Defer.
Winnipeg has the most pressure on them. They without question, their stadium, their fan support, their showing last year was pathetic. Without question, they have the most pressure on them and the expectations were the highest to improve. Second place would be Calgary. They've been the bridesmaid too many times. Their fans expect more to them. They've been out of the playoffs every first game, every time. There's no victories in the playoffs for them. So their expectations are huge in that regard. I'll put Saskatchewan next because Saskatchewan always has pressure on them. It's not any greater this year than it was last year, the year before, or the last decade. So that's why they're not up in the top. But their pressure is always there. Their expectations are always there. But it's always consistent. It might be consistently strong, but it's consistent. Next is real tough for me between BC and Edmonton. Edmonton expectations to improve are huge. In the city of Vancouver, the expectations for BC, we always expect them to do very well. But you know what? As Manasseh says, we're not a big football town. It's not, you know what? They win, they lose. It doesn't matter. The season's over when we move to the next year. So, people aren't suicidal. We don't jump off buildings over here because BC's out of the playoffs.
Or burn people's front lawn.
No, or do stupid things, all sorts of different things with manure and whatever. My ranking there. It's Winnipeg, Calgary, Saskatchewan. Just because of the home playoff, we'll put BC ahead of Edmonton.
There you go. And we'll call this the teaser at this point because I know you guys want to talk about this. At some point, the next show or whatever, another show, another thing we can talk about, we talk about pressure. There's also pressure on losing players because the players don't feel like you're giving them what they need and they feel like they look over the fence and they see the other teams doing stuff. And Fred Stamps, to me, is a perfect example of that conversation. This is a guy who's been consistently good, who's carried the game for his team, and his team has not provided him enough, in my mind, to give him the impression that he can be a winner, which ultimately is all a player wants. You know, aside from the money in that, you know, I think they want to win as much as they want to make good money, because winning does mean you make good money anyway, but winning means a lot. And this is a guy who really hasn't been given any help, has he, Mike?
Oh, no. Hasn't had any help the last couple of years. And when you get a guy, man, that signs an extension to stay in Edmonton where he could have went signed with the Carolina Panthers, I mean, that shows, man, the type of stability that he wants to have in that team. And, you know, he wants to stay there. It's not like he left for the money. He stayed where he was at, you know.
Yeah.
So he wants to win. He said, I want to win a championship in Edmonton.
But he's not looking at BC or he's not looking at Saskatchewan or anything else. Fred Stamps is an Eskimo and he's going to stay one, just like Milt Stegall stayed in the Bombers, even though
no, I get,
they
I,
went
I get that.
Years,
I wasn't suggesting that he wanted to leave, but I am suggesting it must hurt him to look over the fence at the other teams and he sees the core of receivers. For example, how replaceable it seems receivers are in Saskatchewan. You know, how you know, bunches of great receivers are in Montreal right now, and that transition happened very quickly. You know, a lot of the teams, if you're him and you've been that loyal to your team, I don't mind being the big dog, but I like to be a big dog on a big team, not just on a small team, right? That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying about leaving.
And think about how much it kills him to look over in Toronto and see all the success Ricky Ray's having and thinking, man, I mean, when they were together, those two were just like the perfect duo. And now, you know, he's had a carousel of QBs and Mike Riley may or may not be the guy. And he knows if he had Ray, that
Mike Riley is the guy. Mike Riley
we'll
is the guy. Don't,
the question
don't
is, can he stay healthy, and can they block
that's
for him?
It.
That's the question.
What does it mean by can he stay healthy? He stayed healthy the entire last year, and he was beat to a pulp.
But
that's
Chris,
what I'm saying.
That
but
last,
like,
that was
over,
last year.
Imagine if he has another year like last year where he gets beat down again. I mean, they're just taking years off his career.
It adds up, man.
Right.
It adds up.
Well, of course it does. But you know what? That's the GM's job. Although we have no faith in the GM in Edmonton, but that's the GM's job is to build that there, right? And hopefully he does something at least to protect his quarterback. He knows that that's the number one thing that he has to deal with.
My goodness,
he's got to be a complete moron if he doesn't.
My goodness, there's not a player. You know, again, you want to talk. This is still pressure, right? Now, if you're the Edmonton fans and you're the Edmonton, even the Edmonton team, you got to know that there's pressure on Jones to create an environment that allows his quarterback to flourish and flourish in a healthy manner. I mean, he's probably got the most pressure in the league as far as protecting his quarterback because I think Riley is probably the next best quarterback in the CFL, given the opportunity. That guy is another. He is another one of those quarterbacks that just makes passes where other quarterbacks can't. And trust me, from what I see from him, he makes passes when he's got two hands and four legs in his face.
And a foot.
As far as I'm concerned, he still has to beat Matt Nichols in training camp. I'm gonna stand behind that because Matt Nichols beat him out in training camp last year. And, I really don't see that Riley is necessarily the guy. I don't think you can say it today. I understand Chris likes him, and, you know, I see those same things that he does. But at the same time, I just think that position is going to be hotly contested.
Oh, absolutely. And Nichols is the better quarterback. Nichols is the better quarterback.
Or not.
But to
John's point earlier about Christopher Jones, he there was a report coming out saying he's not really that high on Mike Riley. He thinks he's overrated, and he actually wants an open competition in training camp. And not only is it going to be Matt Nichols, but Pat White, they just signed, who was a standout out of West Virginia, just came in. He's going to be competitive. Crompton as well.
Man.
So they're going to have pretty much a wide open competition for all three spots at quarterback, and I wouldn't be surprised if Mike Riley gets demoted. And if he gets demoted, that means he's going to get cut because he's getting paid about $300,000. So
exactly.
If anyone beats him out, he's out the door.
I hope so because he's coming back to BC in a heartbeat.
I'm gonna tell you something. Don't sleep on Pat White. I'm gonna tell you that right now. Don't sleep on Pat
White.
That's what I'm saying. Seriously.
As soon as I read that report that Pat White signed, I knew that was Christopher Jones right there, and that tells me that they're looking to make a change. Oh, Chris Jones, I can't separate the two.
I used to watch Pat White in college and think, man, this guy is a prototypical CFL quarterback.
Yeah, me too.
He's
got the perfect game.
Yes, sir. And
Chris Jones has a couple of contacts.
He has a couple of contacts.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he does.
You know, I'm not as heavy on him. I'm not as hard on him as John is, but you know, he did. There was some strange stuff that went on here, and now that he's gone, it's much easier to hold him accountable for everything that went wrong here, which is easy. It's easy because he's the guy that's gone. It doesn't mean it isn't his fault. It doesn't mean it is. It's just a simple observation on my part.
It's just easy to blame him.
Yeah, I'm not in the room, so I really don't know what's going on. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that's true, but I'm just saying, you know. So, yeah, so
hey guys,
there's a lot of pressure.
Sorry, I got to head out, guys.
Yeah,
I apologize
for cutting
out, but I got to feed
the
horses. Take care.
We're all leaving. See you later.
Cheers.
All right. Well, I just wanted to get you guys to, in a closing comment, I guess, a closing comment. Give you a half a minute to, Kelly, say what's on your mind, if you want to say hello to, what do you want to talk about, what do you want people to know in a quick 20-second burst.
Sure. Just a great night, guys. Thanks again for everything. I want to give a shout-out to Muhammad Ali Sethi in Pakistan. Definitely want to give a shout-out to my brother in Korea. And, just have a great rest of the week, guys, and we will talk on Friday.
And we'll have lots to talk about on Friday, trust me. Mike Townsend.
Yep.
I just want to say, man, I want to give a shout-out to my girl, Eb, and my baby, Sid. Rest in peace to her grandmother and Jeanette Cannon that passed away today. Rest in peace, Gramps.
Rest in peace, right. Our prayers to you and your family, Mike. John Granger.
Just have a good evening,
boat logo.
Folks. And,
boat logo.
And be safe. Oh, the boat logo, you know, Frank, it's
boat logo.
It's there.
Argo
it's
Lifers.
There. It's
Argo
Lifers. Argo Lifers is what we're kicking here. The boat logo is the logo, but being a lifer or a BC lifer or a rider lifer, being an Argo lifer is what it's about. So check out the Toronto Argonaut logo page and you'll become a lifer. Join the section. Buy a ticket.
All right.
Have some fun.
John, before you go, I just want to ask you and Franco, what do you guys think of the stadium design that came out for BMO Field?
Love it.
You guys sold on it?
Good night.
Hello.
Good night. That's Kelly's
son. Good night. We'll be dry, you know. We'll be dry. Is it something that they're going to regret? I think they should have made it in a way that it will fit 30,000 for them too. I think tickets are going to be in demand, and I think we're going to enjoy it regardless. I'm not sure about October, freezing rain by the lake. We'll see about that. But again, we'll be covered. I like it, and that's it.
Yeah. I like it too. Now, I got a special announcement. We will begin our adventure through CIS players, draftable players. We'll be starting with Alex Pierczewski this week. He is University of Toronto Rookie of the Year receiver. Big kid. And you can look him up and his spelling of his name. I'll post it, and you guys will all be able to check him out. The kid's a stud. We'll start talking the draft. We'll have lots to talk about as far as the draft's concerned. We'll start the show by talking to the young man and getting a story on him and getting to know him, much like the teams. Ask him a question. We'll delve into what kind of kid he is. All right. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And John, of course, thank you. And Christopher, thank you. Kelly, thank you. Michael Townsend, thank you. Also, a shout-out to Stevie Myers, Rob J. Emery, Bruce John Inch for joining us through the Internet, and namely Facebook. You can do that as well. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. This has been Blog Talk Radio's Candid Frank Live. CFL is the best football in the world. Again on Friday. See you then.
Good night.